This is The Think Tank, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. With Dr. Mike O'Neill and hosted by Mike Russell. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
We are in the think tank, and the topic of the day is unions and city politics. Too much power, not enough power, answer to our problems, source of our problems. And we have with us two of the most articulate spokesmen on both sides of these issues. Sal DeCiccio, city councilman, probably well known for being at loggerheads with some city unions, probably more than any other single individual. And to his right, not literally, literally not figuratively, Luis Smith, president of Ask Me, and that's American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. That's a mouthful. You represent city employees pretty much with the exception of city and fire. Is that accurate?
Correct. Civilian employees, yes.
What just to set the context here, we're a right-to-work state. That means, if I understand that correctly, a city employee joins your union, that's voluntary, right?
Correct. It's by choice. It's not. It's their free choice and free will to either join or not be in the union. Correct.
So how many city employees are there and how many of them are unionized?
So within the city of Phoenix, we have, you know, outside of the public safety unions, you know, the two fire and police, you know, we do have two AFSCME locals, one for white collar, one for blue collar. And then we have LIUNA, which is Laborers International. They're the entry-level employees, the laborers union. And then we have the managers and supervisors have an association, not a union. They have an association. But between on the civilian side, I think the average is about 60%, you know, 60% of the workforce is union, chooses, you know, to belong to a union.
Voluntarily.
Correct.
Voluntarily joins. Sal, unions, do they have too much power in Phoenix?
Well, they have all the power in Phoenix.
Oh, okay. All right. That's unequivocal.
Yeah, it's very direct. They literally can get a candidate elected or not elected. I mean, if you look in the last campaign, the firefighter union, which everyone loves firefighters, but they spent over $1.1 million trying to take me out in a city council race. That's never happened in the history of the city of Phoenix. They had, and that didn't even include the bodies that they had out there trying to make sure that I didn't get elected again. They put my wife on TV. That's just the kind of stuff that they do. And Luis and I get along pretty well. I mean, we're pretty direct with each other, and we actually, I like him. I know he and I like each other.
In fairness, I'll tell listeners that you suggested that I call him.
Yeah.
By the way, I will also tell you that I called the heads of the police and fire unions, and both declined. Maybe they were busy, or maybe they didn't want to appear on the platform with you. I have no way of knowing.
I would love to have all of them here and debate them all.
Well, it would have been great theater. But let me go to you, Luis. The councilman says that the unions have all the power in Phoenix.
I'd like to see it. I'd like to see where that power is, because if we did, and to back up a bit, you know, I respect, you know, the our other brothers and sisters, or other union brothers from fire, police, and the other unions. The fire union is one of the ones that helped Sal get his seat back and to help get him reelected. You know, they're the ones who helped him so to get into office. So they can't be all that bad. But as far as if there's too much power, if we're completing our fifth year of concessions. Okay, so we've helped the city balance the budget with concessions. People have taken pay cuts, furloughs, you know, for going on 5 years. And then for the next fiscal year, which begins in July, there was additional concessions. So for six straight years, these so powerful unions that Sal claims, if we were that powerful, as he claims, we wouldn't be taking 6 years of concessions.
Let me ask you both to quantify and may contest the figure. Give me some sense of what kind of percentage of a hit are we talking about? I mean, a lot of people took a hit in the recession, so.
Oh, correct. Well, back in 2010, 2012, that's when we took a 3.2% cut in pay and benefits. It was overall compensation. It was a 3.2. And with the understanding that 2 years later, they would be given back. And that was by the city manager, Cavazos, back then. Mm-hmm. And then so when we went to 2012 for the 2012-2014 contract, those concessions didn't come back. You know, those concessions did not come back. They stayed.
So you're still minus 3.2%?
Well, we were minus 3.2%. Then we came back down to you know, we so from 2010 to 2012, we were at 3.2. Those same concessions did stay in from 2012 to 14.
Okay.
And then in the contract that we just, you know, that we just started last July of 2014, we took we're still in that in the concession.
You're still in negative relative to where you baseline of 2010. I'm
correct.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Well, yeah. True and not true.
Okay.
Mostly not true. The majority of employees saw a cut in their pay raises. So what they call merit and longevity are guaranteed pay raises and bonuses that employees get every single year. So the majority of employees, were getting a 4.5% pay raise even in the when the economy was bad. Let me cover 2010.
Okay, but if
go ahead,
if
Luis.
I could, on what Sal's talking about, an entry-level employee comes in at, there's a step system, there's a merit system, which means you have either, most of the steps are like eight steps.
It sort of says you're hired, you have a high school degree, this job is a grade number such and such, you're hired at this level. And by the way, I think I understand both of you, and what you're saying is that there's a grid. So what grade are you? And you get steps mostly by longevity. And then there's a pay scale, and it says this person with 3 years experience makes, say, $31,000 a year.
With what, as long as that employee has a satisfactory performance.
What percent get that? Usually they're set pretty semi-automatic. If 95%
Well, I mean, like I said, there's employees.
There's
employees who don't make it through the system.
Okay. 90% or thereabout get the stuff. So if let me ask you both if I have this wrong. So there is a step that says, you know, and a grade. This person, 3 years experience, makes $31,000 a year. And Luis, what you've said is that number was reduced by 3.5%.
No. Well, the wage part was, you know, so we have to understand when the city negotiates with its labor groups, they negotiate an overall compensation. We may not, every group does not take it all in wages, you know. So,
gotcha.
So when you negotiate what concessions, you negotiate what, where your reductions are coming from. May not all be, some groups did do pay, some groups did do furlough.
Okay. Well, let me give you the
real quick.
First of all, that's just, it was a cut in the pay raise. Every employee gets a pay raise. In 2009, 2010, when people were losing their jobs, city employees got a 5.6% pay raise in their compensation.
Well,
we'll
return on that point because I do want to clarify that. We are in the think tank, and we will be back in just a few seconds. Somebody has to pay the rent here, and we will return. Sal DeCiccio, Luis Schmidt, talking city politics, city unions.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are back in the Think Tank with Sal DeCiccio, Union Slayer, City Councilman Luis Schmidt, head dog in the city unions. We were talking about whether, in fact, city employees took a pay cut, and I think I will describe for you what I think you're both saying. You can argue, you may differ about what it means, but I think you're in agreement on the facts. You've got a grid that says at this number of years of service in this job, you make this salary. That number in the box got cut back by 3.2%, but people, as a result of longevity, are still moving up in the scale. And I think, Sal, your point, you guys can argue about what that means. I mean, that's into the political side of it. City employees may be making a little bit more, but not as much as their prior contract would have given. Can we agree on that?
I agree on that.
You know, the rest of it is sort of political posturing, cutting rates of increase or whatever.
Right.
But, I mean, they took a hit. There were some givebacks.
Yes.
They took a hit relative to what they would have gotten had there not been negotiated down.
I think cut in the pay raise.
Right.
So here's a question for Sal. I think you agree with me here that with the employee concessions, no matter where they came from, they did help balance the city budget, did it not?
No, that's the biggest lie on the planet.
But money was taken from the employees. Yes. Was it not? Yes
no,
or no?
No. It wasn't taken from the employees because here's what happened. They negotiated a contract with pay raises and benefits built, extra pay raises built in than the year before. It was a cut in the pay raise and the bonuses.
Agree that there was cuts for employees.
There was a cut.
Okay, there was a cut. You know what?
You know what? I think you guys are agreeing on
this. Yes.
You guys are agreeing on the facts, and you're both throwing on semantics to make your point.
Yes.
I think somebody listening sort of gets it, and you can characterize that how you will.
Can I make it really simple?
Make it quick.
They made more money the next year than they did the previous year. Most people would see that as a pay raise.
I think the flip side, and Luis is chafing at the bit here, I'd say, it's not as much as they would have gotten. It may or may not have covered inflation or something.
But, not as much as they would have gotten.
But it was still a pay raise. And fairness on the other side is, they kept their jobs. So there were almost no cuts in the city, am I right?
That's absolutely correct. In 2000...
There's been reduction. The workforce has been reduced. Our employees leaving out the, were employees like fired or, let go or no, they were not. Employees, the city has cut, the full-time employees. Yeah. They've seen that.
In fact, I've seen, this just came from Sal. 2007, we had 11,900 employees. The next fiscal year, 9,400. Mm-hmm.
It's done through the church. Let me walk you through what actually did occur, too. First of all,
Fewer employees.
It's correct. Fewer employees, definitely. Yeah.
We're not firing people, but we're often not replacing them.
No, it's correct. Almost impossible to get fired from the city of Phoenix. I mean, virtually impossible. In 2009, 2010, when everybody was letting go of people, small companies were letting go of 15 to 20 people. The city of Phoenix let go 15 people. The rest of it was done through cutting vacant positions that there was nobody there. Mm-hmm. Not that, just so you know, too, I'm not a union slayer. My dad was a steel worker. I grew up real poor. I mean, I grew up in a union family.
And he got the benefits of the union family. He got he was put, Sal is a firsthand example of the benefits of a union, of a hard work. Working family strives for.
Middle class.
Well, that but creates an interesting
situation.
The benefit
of America.
And it's a question that I want to address to you, Luis. Because as a country, we do have this history. A whole lot of people got raised up as a result of unions as a result of union wages and agreements, moved from poverty into the middle class. And some of them did real well. But in the last, couple of decades, there has developed this sort of anti-union kind of undercurrent in our culture. And I'm not talking specifically about Phoenix. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about as a nation as a whole. It's sort of like the union sort of lost the soul of frankly, the people that would seem to me would be their logical supporters. How did that happen? And have I got that right?
I think that's an accurate description. I mean, that's a good picture of what has happened in the last couple of decades here in America, and unfortunately, people saw the need for unions to get improve the workplace, benefits, safety in the workplace, working conditions, different civil liberties that weren't there before that the unions pushed, and what happened is once many of those changes were made, then people came into the workforce with already having decent working conditions, decent benefits and pay. And then so the trend started, well, I already have this. Maybe, it just became, we as unions, we failed to, to carry over, to make sure that, to pass the baton to the new generation of what the importance of a union was and what the mission and focus of a union was.
I have one thought, and it may be part of it. In the 30s, 40s, and 50s, the big unions in this country were industrial unions, GM and Ford and General Electric and U.S. Steel. Now those unions are all being, there's outsourcing and they are in the decline. And the biggest growth in unions in America are public employee unions. And I wonder if the extent to which that's happening is somewhat, people are saying, all those union benefits, I'm for them, but wait a minute, not if I have to pay for them. That guy with that cushy job and that pension, and we'll get into pensions in a moment, or whatever it is, my taxes are paying that, so no, all of a sudden, do you think is that part of it?
I think it is. I think it is, because sometimes there's a misunderstanding of the trade-off as an employee. When you come as a public employee, you come to perform a service. Once you perform that service, it's for a set amount of pay or whatever or benefits, and that is a trade-off, and as a government employee, as a public service employee, it's a trade-off, a service for pay, and unfortunately, you know, some people who may not have the best job may not have it. You have to remember the private, you know, the private sector flourished. You know, when the economy was doing good, they flourished. But the public employees, you know, the public sector has always been steady. It's steady, and that's why people came here, because it was a steady place. It was something that reliable.
Not anymore. Money.
So then what happened is when the private sector started to see the decline, when they started to see that, then they started to look at the public sector and said, well, look what they have. Those jobs now became, at first, nobody wanted those jobs.
Yeah,
they didn't want those jobs. But then when the economy took a dive, then they started to look at the public sector and said, well, look what they have. They don't have it. Why should they?
My dad took his first federal job in 1950, and then the essential trade-off was as followed. One was you made considerably less money than a private sector employee. Number two, you had job security.
Yes.
That's exactly it. And so if you look at it, that was the model that was here. What ended up happening, what we see today, though, and this is where the concern is that not only do they have job security now, but they're getting paid more than most people in the private sector. You are. I mean, this compensation study was phony that was put out. It just was. And then the other part of it deals with the fact that then they're taken care of for life. And the conversation I've had with city staff, city manager, I said, we can no longer handle the extra costs here. And so what's going to happen is every employee we hire at the City of Phoenix, we have now made a 50-year commitment. So we have to make sure that that function is a strategic function that we need to be doing internally. So, you know, in regards to the unions, there's no doubt that the unions were helpful to my family. They were. But what happened is they've now taken too much and they've gotten what I call greedy. And that's what they've done. They're taking too much now, and they're demanding too much, and they're more concerned about themselves than everybody else.
Well, I'm sure Luis has another view of that, but sure. It's going to have to wait until after the break in order to see that. We're in the think tank discussing city unions, city politics, and the like in the think tank on KTAR.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Back in the think tank, I'm Mike O'Neill. We are talking unions and city politics. Sal DeCiccio, city councilman, often on the other side of issues surrounding unions. And the top union guy in the city of Phoenix, Luis Schmidt, the head of the Ask Me Union, that is the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And Luis, I promised you first shot. Sal thinks you guys make too much money.
Well, I think what he just said is that we ask for too much. Mm-hmm. But, you know, have unions made mistakes in the past? I think that's a fair statement. Probably the you know, unions have made mistakes. They're, you know, unions have their dark days too, but we have to look at what unions do, the positive changes that they've made. If we look at the history of unions here in the Phoenix area within the city of Phoenix, AFSCME has been here over 40 years already, since 1972. Since 1972, we've been here. Across America, we've been here for over 75 years. We have a history here of Phoenix of working with our community. We live in our community, and we want our community to be successful. So we live in the valley. We pay our taxes, and we're members of our community. We don't ask for too much. If we ask for too much, that would be called a greedy unions, but that is not what we are.
You know where I'm coming back to this issue of how public perception, and I think historically it's evolved. And if we're in 1930 and, you know, the coal miners are unionizing and they've got horribly unsafe working conditions, and to add to that, they're working for peanuts, and the unions get together and they get them, frankly, safer working conditions. They get them a decent wage. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of empathy for that. But yeah, fast forward into this century, and we look most recently at the dockage stoppage on the West Coast. The longshoremen are holding up. They're having a dispute. And then you look into average wages there. And these are getting into six figures. Now, that's with overtime and all that, but these are people of no particular skill. I mean, there's some, but it's not like a six-figure job. It's like a six-figure job because they got a union that is very strong. People are looking at that and saying, you know, I don't make a fraction of that, and they no longer have my sympathy. I think if I want to backtrack, if I could, to the municipal context, and I see this in every campaign. We're going to go to the pensions. The union guys truck out. They know who your favorite poster boy. It's police and fire, you know. And in the last pension thing, they said, "Well, you're going to take away police pension. You're going to take, you know." And these guys are saving our lives and all that. The other side, in fairness, the image that gets trucked out, subliminally or otherwise, is some, I hate this word, but bureaucrat, right? Because it's undefined. It's some guy sitting at a desk, doing not much of anything, pulling down a big salary. Those are the two images. And you know, one of you guys is touting the image of when they say they're getting too much, it's that quote bureaucrat, you know, as opposed to the cop that's there when you
call. Well, let me give you a different image on that.
Sure.
Okay. And this, I think Luis would like it, that I talk about some other unions. If you look at the firefighter union, we had three firefighters, not the very top, but near the top. They get everybody at City Hall gets walk-away cash, and they get a pension. We had three firefighters in 2011.
Walk-away cash is probably payment for sick leave and things like that.
Deferred comp, vacation.
Which the unions guys would say, that's stuff I earned.
Well,
you're just cashing.
However you want to say it, most people in the general public that pay these bills don't get any walk-away cash. So they get walk-away cash and a pension. In 2011, just to bring in the firefighters, for example, and I use this in almost all my speeches now because I want to give people a perspective. It's not just Luis's group, it's everybody. We had three walk away with over $1 million in cash and then start six-figure pensions. One person spiked his pension from $96,000 a year to $136,000 a year for life.
Explain what pension spiking is and how does that work?
Spiking is... It has not ended, regardless
of what your stance
is.
What is it?
What it means is that you get to cash in your deferred compensation, your sick leave, your vacation, and your average, your top three of your top 10 years are what determine your pension. So when you cash these numbers in.
Let me put this out. If you're earning $60,000 a year and you got $30,000 in all of this unused sick leave and stuff like that because you haven't taken
it. Your average goes up.
You get to... Jerry rigged that that gets thrown into your base and you get a pension as if you had earned $90,000 that year.
It's the biggest scam on the public. Okay. That's
but
out
there's
there.
Caps. There's caps. Like I said, if as a city employee, if you take all your sick leave throughout your entire career, you get paid 100%, and all that is would be considered you go towards your pension because you're getting paid. The city of Phoenix has a program which they changed it in 2012. But before 2012, there was rules that you can cash out less than 25%. So you had to have a minimum
at the higher wage.
You had to have a minimum of sick leave hours that you didn't use, because every hour that you didn't use, you're providing service to the citizens of Phoenix. And that's why we still have over 93% approval rating by the citizens themselves. So you didn't cash out all your sick leave. The employees only got less than 25%.
If you had 3 months of sick leave, you got to put in for three
you had
weeks.
The rule said you had to have over 750 hours. You had to have a minimum of 750 hours. Then once you did that, they took 250 away. Then you only got 25% of whatever was remaining.
Here's the game. Bottom line is a first year employee, and this is how the game starts. It starts with the amount of hours that they get off per year. Okay.
I'm a city employee. I started working yesterday. Sick leave do I get?
Well, you get total combined 40 and a half days off, sick leave, vacation, federal holidays, and other holidays, and personal days. 40 and a half days off if you're a first year employee, lowest level at the city of Phoenix,
Let's parse that out. Everybody gets about 10 holidays. So that's 10. Yeah. Right? There's 30 left.
Well, we get 12, 11 and a half.
I'm round numbers. I just wanted 30 days.
You get 10 hours a month.
That's in effect, most people would say that's 20 days of vacation and 10 days of sick leave.
Well, you get 10 hours a month that adds up and it never goes away. So here's the game that gets played. It's not unusual for employees to walk away with 2,000 to 3,000 hours of sick leave. And Luis is right.
And
they only cash in a portion.
And round numbers again, 2,000 hours is a year's work.
It's correct. About a year's work. Right. That's how much sick leave that they've accumulated. Then they cash in a portion of that, which then spikes their pension. And then what they do with the remaining amount, then they get to add that to years of service, which then spikes their pension too, because it gives them more years of service.
Let me ask you, Sal.
They get to use it all.
Okay. Let's play devil's advocate on that. Let's say you were to tell city employees you can't spike, you can't use any of that, you get none of that, you got to use it or lose it. My guess is all that vacation is going to get used then. Isn't that going to happen?
Yes, some of it could be used. That's true. I mean, we paid out about
$10 million. If I'm an employee, I'm saying that if you're not going to pay me for it, that I'm going to use it.
Well, yeah, they're going to use some of it. That's true. But the bottom line is they're using it anyways when they cash it in. And they use it part of the pension, which is a long-term debt.
By the way, you said it was 40 days.
40 and a half days.
Do they round numbers, okay?
Yes, okay.
I don't think people are obsessing about the half a day. But is sick leave segregated in a different pile?
Yes, it is. I mean, it's the same pile that he's talking about. Yeah. But
Some unions do what they call PTO, paid time off. It's all one pile.
We would love to go there.
So you get those hours, but in your first year, in the first 6 months as a new employee, you're not allowed to use vacation. You're not allowed. And it has to be something.
Everything has
to be approved. Mm-hmm. Sick leave is not a guaranteed. Sick leave still has to be approved. You know, you can't just, you know, abuse your sick leave. It has to be an approved system.
Well, they cash in at retirement, and then they spike their pension. That's what they do.
So he uses that word spike. That's this word that he likes. But at the end of the day, you know, there's rules that have been put in place, okay? At the end of the day, the employees, there was benefits available to them when they entered the city of Phoenix, and they play by the rules, they followed the rules, mm-hmm. and some of those rules got changed over time. And so as Sal may not like the different compensations, whatever the rules are, he may not like them, but employees didn't create these rules. We didn't create these rules. We went into a system, we followed it, and there's been changes made to get away from some of those changes that Sal talks about.
Well, Luis is right. They are following the rules. Those are the rules that were created.
They were negotiated, right?
Well, they were negotiated, but it was gamed, mm-hmm. and there were... If you think about it, everybody that's in the room negotiating that are beneficiaries of the system. Mm-hmm. Every one of them. And they're the same ones that prepare the reports. They're the ones
that... So you're saying that the manager,
bring it to the politicians.
The manager who's sitting on the other side of the desk is going to live by the same rules that he negotiates.
Yeah. The same concessions, yes. The same cuts, the same furloughs.
Okay, we keep on promising to get to pensions. We're going
to
get to pensions in our final session. In the think tank, Sal DeCiccio, city councilman, Luis Schmidt, AFSCME union president, back in the think tank in just a moment. KTAR.
The think tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, fourth and final session. Mike O'Neill here with Sal DeCiccio, city councilman, Luis Schmidt, union president for the city of Phoenix. I have been promising that we would talk about pensions. Luis, what happened in the real quick summary of what happened the last couple go-rounds with pensions? And then, Sal, you can talk about what's in the offing immediately.
Okay. We had Frank Fairbanks, the previous city manager, who was a longstanding city manager. He retired, and he increased his pension with some of the he followed the rules that were in place, and he increased it. The council approved, you know, a pay raise for him towards
whenever
the end.
That happens, Lori Roberts, who's in here
correct.
All the time, writes an article about that.
And then, so we had him do that. And then David Cavazos, you know, also followed the same system, you know, and Sal approved it, too. He voted for,
basically, you're talking about people who work a lot, don't take any vacation, don't take any sick leave. At the end, as we've described, they get to throw the value of all that into their salary.
Yes.
Their quote salary for that last year is up, and therefore their pension's higher.
Yes. So then...
Sal uses the word spiking. You don't like it, but that's what it is. You're increasing the base.
Yeah.
Of
yes.
You get a pension that's a function of how much money you make multiplied by the number of years by some, what is it, 2% to 3% per year, something like that.
Exactly. Right. So after those,
it's a formula, and you're increasing one of the numbers in the formula.
Yes. So then after—
By a lot.
After, if you don't
after,
like it, you call it spiking.
After these people at the very top, you know, took mm-hmm. with their numbers, you know, were publicized, and, you know, the Republic ran some articles, and then that's when the talk began, and that's when there was a pension committee that was chaired by Councilman Gates. Back then, you know, in 2012, they formed a pension committee to look at this, and then they sent reforms to the voters in 2013. Those reforms, I think the city said it was going to be like over $600 million that they were going to save. They made drastic changes. They did. That's when we created a Tier 2 employee. So we have Tier 2 employees. We changed the rule of 80.
Oh, is that what the union called it? You hire new employees at a lower rate. Is that?
That's what happened, yes.
Because in the airlines, they call it B scale.
Yeah, yeah,
it's sort of like we're taking care of our current guys. The new guys coming in aren't going to get the same deal.
It's not that you're taking care of. At the end of the day, we all have to follow the state constitution. And the state constitution is very clear on what you can or can't do with pensions. Mm-hmm. So we created a new tier. The voters approved it in 2013. And then in spring of 2013, and then that's when in July of 2013, we began a new Tier 2 employees.
And in fairness, you hired people under an old system. They understood that's what the deal is. It's really dicey to change it for them.
Like Sal's slogan, promises made, promises kept. And that's what it was, you know. So then that's what we had in 2013. And then last year, we saw this Prop 487 that was on the ballot, you know, that made it to the ballot. And
a quick summary of what that would have done.
It would have brought in a defined contribution. It would have been a full 401k plan.
And defined contribution, just in case anybody. That's where the city and the employee put in money, goes into a pile of money, and instead of having an annuity so much per month forever, you have access to that pile of money.
And it's a roller coaster. If the stock market goes up, you go up. If it goes down, you go down. And it. And at the end of the day, it would have been more costly for the. It's more costly for the taxpayers.
One of the things I must say, as somebody who's looked at these pension, actually worked with the unions on them, that's true about that is that defined contribution does have to be honest. You have to put in X dollars. You have it. It's yours. It's like money in the bank. Defined benefit. How much the city funds, you can have actuaries make slightly different assumptions, and you can stick the out years. You can stick your children with the bill if you play a little fast and loose. Minor, so you assume a 3% growth instead of a 4% growth or something, and your numbers change astronomically.
It's exactly correct. If I could, though, too, to be real clear, every city employee gets a pension and a 401k right now. It's called deferred comp. So everybody gets both. Everybody does. And the variation depends on how much that they've negotiated in there. So everybody, as a citizen,
that's fine. But how much is it really?
It's a lot.
Let me
cover some numbers though. Right. Can I ask
this question of both of you? Because it's going to be very difficult to understand whether something's a lot or a little.
Correct.
But here I can understand. What percent of salary does the city pay towards pensions, and don't care whether it's defined benefit or fixed benefit, that would give me some idea how big.
Okay. Right now it's 20%.
So right now the Tier 2 employees, it's a 50-50. It's a 50-50 split.
But how much the city, is that 10 and 10?
Well, no. We have Tier 1 and Tier 2. Tier 1, which are the current employees, standard, which is almost all of them except for 500. So 500 of the 14,000 are under Tier 1. Mm-hmm. Those individuals pay 5% of their own toward the pension. Okay. The city taxpayer pays 20%. Okay. And that's going to go up every single year. And it's going to continue to go up. The Tier 2 that he's talking about.
So the city contribution is – so if you make $100,000, I'm choosing that because not because that's what most employ, but because that's a round number. The city contributes 20, you contribute 5 out of your 100, and that's what goes to the pension.
That's exactly true.
And the voters, remember, back in 85, it was at 7%, but the voters lowered that to 5%. And again, the voters are the ones who increased this to what we have now. It's a 50-50 split, which is right now it's over 14%, and it's set to increase to over 15%.
And these are for the new employees.
Everybody
relatively modest number, but it'll be a growing number.
That's what got changed yesterday.
From 2013 forward.
I cover just a couple things because this is where the public needs to understand. What's happening with pension costs, it's taking more and more services away. We have less employees. We have more revenue than we've ever had in the history of the city of Phoenix. But because of these long-term expenses, these pension costs, it's taking more and more money away from services.
Can we move to what happened yesterday?
Sure.
And what is the proposal that is being bandied about right now? Because this may come up for a city vote.
Well, it's more than likely going to come up for a city vote. The voters passed, as Luis said, this plan back in 2012 that was supposed to be the cure-all, end-all to all of it. Well, it turned out it was a disaster for new employees because they can't afford it.
And I warned the city taxpayers. I warned the council.
No,
back
Luis
then.
Was right.
I was out there saying, but we got to, you know, they didn't listen to us.
Well, that's because it was done by politicians.
Well, if there is a 20 and 5 for the current people, and it's being split equal, I don't know, it was 12.5 each or something like that. If you were having had 5% taken out, now your takeout is 12.5. That's a pinch.
Well, it was going to go close to 18-19% next year.
And we have some of our employees who are coming to the city, but they can't afford. They can't
and
afford
especially
their insurance.
You're talking about new employees who are at the bottom end of the pay scale,
and
you're taking that money out now.
That's
a bigger hit than 3%.
But the taxpayers are paying that though. So someone's got to pay it. If people want to get the pension, someone's got to pay it. So at the bottom line is, Luis is right. I mean, I can't not see a current employee wanting to pay 15 to maybe 18 to 20% of their salary going to pension costs. So why should the taxpayers
This sounds like medical benefits. Everybody wants great medical benefits because they think they're free. They have
not
no
free.
Idea what employers are. I mean, I run, for example, focus groups with people. People who are complaining at older groups and saying, "I'm, you know, medicine's too expensive. I'm, you know, they're making me pay a $10 copay every single my doctor. I see six doctors a week," and they're saying that, and they have no concept that $10 doesn't even begin to cover what an employer or somebody else is paying.
It's shocking.
Hidden
costs. Well, that's why if you look at our total retirement costs at the City of Phoenix, everything, all in, police, fire, Luis's groups, everything, it's over $300 million
real quick,
a year.
We're getting near the end here. What, in a quick nutshell, what's on the table? What's it going to do?
Here's what it's going to do. It's going to fix the thing that the politician said was the great plan before. It literally, what it does, and I'm not supportive of it until they make some more changes.
What is it first?
But what it does is it says that certain employees are going to, not certain, all new employees will be fixed at 11% cap, then the taxpayers have all the risk on top of it. It doesn't stop the pension spiking that Gates, Waring, and I would like to see in there. And if they could put the pension spiking, then I think we could go along with it. If they can end it with just new employees, at the very least, then I think we could go along with something marginal.
And there's on top of that, there's a reduction of benefits for those, because it's going to create another third. It's going to create a third tier of employees. So they're going to see a reduction of their benefits. The what it's used to calculate their pensions, that's going to be reduced with this reform. But it also saves over $38.8 million for the City of Phoenix.
Real quick, Sal, if you want to stop pension spiking, again, what do you do with the – real quick, I got about 30 seconds. What do you do with – aren't people going to take all that time off, and are we going to have –
What you do is you create a use it or lose it. They already are. It's already cost us close to $10 million a year to pay out for this for
retirement.
Make
people use it as they go along, which means that you're going to have slightly fewer employees on duty at a given moment right now.
Highly unlikely, though.
Is that acceptable to the union side?
No.
No, we serve. We serve. Like I said, we're willing to discuss, and we have a great history working with the city. So, again, we live in our community, we thrive in our community, and we support our community.
Right. Thank you, Mike.
It's been a great discussion, Sal DeCicco, City Councilman, Luis Schmidt, President of Ask Me.
Thank you.
If you need to take a look at old issues of the think tank, they are on mikeoneill.org. On the web, O'Neillresearch.com has some of our public opinion research that is in the public domain. And hopefully Mike Russell will be back with me next week.